You're listening to continuing coverage of the Abby Zwirner civil trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
First time back in session, you may be seated.
All right. I just need to admonish. I know everyone knows what we've talked about before, and it was a mistake, but obviously we're using initials for anyone under the age of 18. I know it was a mistake. Just want to admonish everyone again, okay? All right, thank you very much. All right, are we ready to proceed?
Yes, Ron.
All right, great. All right, everything's up and running, and were we picking up at Exhibit 64A, or are we moving on?
We'll move on to an alternative exhibit, Judge.
All right, very well. Go ahead.
Jersey in the box.
Alright, so we're going to pick off where we left off. We have fixed our difficulties.
Ms. Kovac?
Yes.
Where we left off, we were still on the playground?
Yes.
January 6, 2023, you had spoken to Ms. Warner. She was now on the playground. You were in communication with her through text message. And at some stage, you went out onto the playground to speak to her.
Correct.
Ms. Kovac, I'm going to show you what's been marked for identification as Exhibit 64F for the defense. You can see it on your display.
Which one?
64F. Ms. Kovac, do you recognize that display? Is that the playground for Woodjack?
Yes.
Your Honor, permission to publish to the jury?
Any objection?
No objection, Your Honor.
Without objection, 64F admitted and published.
Ms. Kovac, I'm just going to play this portion and ask you some questions about it. So if you could pause now, Brian. The two folks you see there on the background, that's obviously that's you and Ms. Warner.
Correct.
And you're out there speaking on the conversing on the playground, right?
Correct.
All right. And you're facing the other students who are there present on the playground?
Correct, I think, or my head is turned towards her. I'm not sure.
You're speaking to each other, and you're discussing the possibility that JT might have a weapon.
I was telling her that she could call the mom at any time and to see if he would come over to me, asking her where he was.
Right. And then after you finish speaking with her, you leave the playground, right?
Correct, because I had to go test.
You had to go test?
State test, yes.
Right. They were state mandated tests?
Correct.
That require strict compliance?
Correct.
And you prioritize that over confirming whether or not there was a firearm on this child?
I had already told the assistant principal several times, thinking she would do action because I was getting ready to go test and did not have my phone.
I'm going to show you clip 64G of the defense. That should appear on your display shortly. Can you see it?
No. Now I can.
Brian, can you play the clip? Permission to publish to the jury, Judge?
Any objection?
No objection, Your Honor. Thank you.
You may. Published and admitted.
Brian, can you play the clip, please? That's you and Ms. Warner walking back towards the building. And if you could pause, Brian. You're walking just normally. There's no urgency, right? It's such a casual pace.
I mean, I was walking. I just had my knee replaced then.
You weren't hustling back into the building to report directly to the administration?
I had already reported several times.
And you were walking back to the building, right?
I was,
for testing. With your back facing these children who are on the playground?
My back is not towards them right now in this video.
But when you're in the building, you're not out there with the children, right?
No, I was not.
Ms. Kovac, do you remember after the shooting happens, you spoke with law enforcement?
Correct.
And you told those folks that when you were speaking to Mrs. Warner on the playground, you told her that you thought, if anything, JT had a toy gun.
I do not recall that.
Your Honor, I would ask you, I'm going to play Defense Exhibit 57A8, which has been marked for identification. It should appear on your display, Ms. Kovac, and I'm going to ask if you recognize this.
What number again is it?
It's 57A8, Your Honor.
Dan, I don't play this speech.
Oh, okay.
You need to publish.
Let's switch to 57A10.
Both of them have volume, okay. So you want me just to pause it so that you can establish?
That's fine. We can do 57A8.
57A? Is that correct?
You're not putting it on the jury yet, your impression. Are you about to put on?
You're right.
So I would have to check to put it on.
No, you're right. You're right.
Okay.
Sorry. Ms. Kovac, would it refresh your recollection to review your interview with law enforcement?
I have not reviewed that. I know after the shooting, I went into pretty much shock at that time, so yes. I have not seen it or heard it. The only thing I've seen is one body cam when the police were coming in on us.
Ms. Kovac, after this event happened, after this tragedy happened, after you spoke to law enforcement, after everything else we talked about, you reached out to Dr. Parker.
After the shooting?
Do you remember texting her and wishing her well?
I don't truly remember that.
Objection, Your Honor, to hearsay.
Right, you're asking her about a text that she sent, that this witness sent?
Yes, but it wouldn't be offered for the truth.
All right. If she sent it, so
okay.
He's not asking for a response.
Are you trying to show?
Ryan, am I correct? You just want to show her text?
I'll show this to the witness as well as counsel, and they can see it.
Okay, so the objection's overruled, just that portion, anything she texted, if she can identify it.
Brian, can you pull up exhibit 119P131, please? Exhibit 119-P131. Ms. Kovac, do you see that on your display?
Yes.
Please take time to review that.
Do you want me to read it out loud?
No, read it to yourself.
Oh.
I'll focus your attention on the third text down. This document that you're looking at,
mm-hmm.
Do you recognize this as a text message you sent to Dr. Parker?
I think it was in the group text.
And you can see Ebony
Parker's name. Yeah, I see
it. And the date is, this is in January of 2023, after the incident, correct?
Correct. I mean, I'm a kind person.
And permission to publish to the jury, Your Honor.
Any objection to just, I guess, per text?
And Your Honor, I would object to this text. I think certainly the entirety should not come in because of hearsay, Your Honor, but then when you send just her text, I do feel that it's out of context. I would object to having that come in. I don't see how that's relevant to what happened on the January 6th.
All right.
So she sent after when she said she's in shock.
Right, so your objection is relevance.
Yes, Judge.
Okay, I'm overruling that, and they've now brought up just her text. So I'm going to overrule that objection and you may publish.
Ms. Kovac?
Yes.
Have we published? This is 2 days after the incident.
Yes.
And you're sending a message to Dr. Parker, quote, "You are an amazing person and educator."
And that is true. She
no
got her
one,
doctorate.
No one could have predicted this. That's what you told her.
Meaning a 6-year-old would bring a gun to school premeditated to shoot his teacher.
No one would have predicted that. And you were telling her the truth then, right?
I've been telling the truth the whole time.
So you agree here in court today, no one could have predicted this?
Judge, I'm going to object to it. No one.
Yeah, I'm going to sustain that objection.
No further questions of the witness, Judge.
All right, thank you. All right, any redirect?
J.R.
All right, no redirect. All right, is she under your subpoena as well?
Yes, just making sure that text was noted.
Yeah, I did. Yep, I admitted. All right, so do you want her released for the day?
Released for the day, Your Honor.
All right,
and we'll let her know if we need her.
Okay. All right, so you're still technically a witness, but I'm not going to keep you here for the next 8 days. So you are going to be free to go, but do not discuss your testimony or anything about this case with anyone or listen to or hear about any of the coverage, okay?
Okay.
All right, they'll let you know if you are released or needed back here.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much. All right. Who is your next witness?
Dr. Alan Chapp, Your Honor, and he is in the witness room.
All right. And is this an expert witness?
Yes, sir.
All right. Has there been any? What's that?
There's no controversy with regard to that.
Okay, I was going to say I didn't recognize that name as anyone we previously discussed. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I know I told you this at the very beginning of the trial. I know I said a lot of things at the beginning of the trial, but I just want to remind you that statements by attorneys or the court during any evidentiary arguments, as you've heard, we're not going to make you get up and leave every time we do that because we'd never get this done, are not evidence and should not be considered as evidence. They're just legal arguments for the parties, okay? Thank you very much.
Witness has not been sworn, Your Honor.
Correct.
He has not.
All right. Stop there and raise your right hand for me. Thank you.
Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you out?
I do.
All right. Have a seat over here for me.
Come over here. Just watch your step, okay?
Good afternoon, Doctor. We're close to a promised time to get on the stand, I hope. Could you tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury your full name, please?
Sure. My name is Alan Chapp.
And you are a doctor?
Yes.
Can we go through briefly your medical educational background so the jury can understand why you're here today?
Yes.
Where did you go to med school?
University of Cincinnati.
And when did you graduate from University of Cincinnati?
2008.
And after you left Cincinnati in 2008, I take it you've been working in the medical field?
Correct.
Do you have a specialty?
Surgical critical care and trauma surgery.
Surgical?
Critical care.
Mm-hmm. Could you explain to the jury what surgical critical care is?
So critical care is when we take the people that have, you know, life-threatening illnesses, life-threatening injuries, that go to the intensive care unit. That's my job is to take care of them.
What is the difference between an emergency room doctor where people come in by ambulance and what you do in the surgical critical care field?
So the emergency room doctors are the ones that see the injuries or illnesses initially, do the diagnosis, do the workup that needed, and then we come in as consultants once they figure out that this is something that needs our expertise.
And that expertise being surgical necessity.
Yes.
Now, after you graduated from Cincinnati, where did you go work in the field of surgical critical care?
Well, I did surgery residency and surgical critical care fellowship at Eastern Virginia.
And when did you finish that?
2013.
And after 2013, did you continue your education or you go
to work? I worked afterwards.
Tell us where you went to work.
So initially it was in right outside Durham, North Carolina. I had a hospital down there, and then I was in private practice for another 2 years, and then I came back to I started at Riverside as a critical care and trauma surgeon, and I've been there for 7 years.
So you have been at Riverside Hospital as a critical care surgical doctor for 7 years?
That's correct.
At this time, and your specialty is surgical critical care?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, at this time, I'd like to tender Dr. Chapp as an expert in the field of surgical critical care.
Any objection?
No objection, Your Honor.
So admitted and acknowledged.
Now, Doctor, before I ask you about your particular testimony here with regard to Abigail Zwirner, did I show you and prepare, based on the medical records, an anatomical illustration showing what happened to Ms. Zwirner?
Yes.
Permission to approach?
You may.
Record, seen it? And let me ask you if this is, in fact, that medical illustration, and would it help you describe to the jury what happened for purposes of your care of her?
Yes.
Your Honor, at this time, I'd like to have permission. I'll leave one up there, but it'll show up on your screen.
Okay.
Permission to publish it to the jury?
Any objection?
No objection.
All right, without objection.
MV11?
I'm sorry, what number is that given?
MV11, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Looks a little bit different on mine. Now, you see what on your screen? Yes. You can see it as well. I want to go over, if we could, first. Upon arrival at the hospital, could you tell us what were, and I believe it's in the upper left-hand corner, and I think, with a little luck, I can show you on your screen. Do you see the red?
I do.
Congratulations. Could you go through and tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury, what were your concerns upon her arriving under your care?
So the first time I met the patient, the medics brought her in, and you could tell that she was anxious, diaphoretic or sweating. When she was hooked up to the monitors, her blood pressures were dangerously low. Her oxygen levels were low. She was complaining of chest pain. She was complaining of trouble breathing.
Well, let's go through some of the terminology that's used in this record, which is in the medical records given to you. What does hypotensive mean?
It means that her blood pressure is low.
And when you say blood pressure is low, what does that indicate to someone in your field, surgical specialist?
Well, with a traumatic injury, like I worry about that she's bleeding from somewhere.
All right. What does hypoxic mean?
It means she's not getting enough oxygen, or her oxygen levels are low.
And I take it you measure that, and there's a certain critical level where low is a danger to someone like Abigail Zwirner.
Correct.
Lightheaded, chest pain, all of those things. Let's talk about the last one. Tachycardia. What does that mean to the jury?
Her heart rate is high.
Now, this is how she arrives in your care initially with diagnosis.
Yes, sir.
And what do you do with regard to stabilizing her upon her arrival at Riverside?
So every time you meet a trauma patient, you want to make sure that, you know, she can basically what we call is protect her airway. So if she's, you know, breathing, or does she need, you know, support, and she did need a face mask for additional oxygen. You check to make sure, you look at her blood pressure, and you know, with her blood pressure being low, we start to figure out, you know, where, you know, why her blood pressure is low. Is she bleeding from somewhere?
I take it there was a bullet hole in her body that was evident?
Yes.
To you.
Yes.
Do you all do scans and x-rays as well for purposes of trying to zero in where the damage is?
Yes, you do a chest x-ray in what we call the trauma bay, her initial resuscitative room.
I want to start using this diagram by first going to the bottom right-hand corner, which is the anterior skeletal view. And tell us, I'm not professional in this one. Tell us what this is and what are we looking at for purposes of Abigail Zwirner's injury.
So you're looking at the bone in the front is the sternum, and then she's got ribs on either side. You can see her, since you're looking straight on it, it's her left shoulder, and you can see the bullet wound right underneath her left shoulder, or we call it the axilla or armpit.
And that is a broken rib, if I'm not mistaken, on the fracture of the left fourth rib?
Yes.
Now, let's go to the center and explain to the jury what we're looking at first, describing the bullet entrance for purposes of her body and what was going on here in this diagram.
So the bullet wound was in, like, it's in her left axilla or armpit. It went into her chest. You could see that by the going through the rib, and basically it's gone into the chest wall, and then through the lung, and that basically sits right next to her backbone, the bone.
I'm going to again try to tell us, is this here, this circle that I'm around, tell me what that is?
That's like a cross section of her heart.
And what is the
the pointed area there that looks like a silver piece.
That's a bullet fragment.
Okay, and that would be the remnants of the bullet that entered her body?
Yes, sir.
Now, I'm going to shift from that diagram for a second into the bottom left. Describe for the jury what we're looking at here as it relates to the center diagram that shows the bullet entry in, wound into her lung. Are we looking at her spinal column?
There? Yes, that's correct.
And is that, again, the same bullet fragment that entered from the center diagram?
Yes.
Now, what does that mean to you as a surgeon? Can we go in to someone like Abby Quayles Werner urgently and remove that? Is that something that you would do immediately, or would you not do it? What's the diagnosis, and how do you get through it?
I would not take that bullet out initially, no.
All right, tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury why layman's got a bullet, get the bullet out. Tell me why you don't do it as a surgical in someone in Abigail's Werner's condition.
Well, it's too much important structures around it, nerves, bones, muscles, large blood vessels, that you could cause more damage.
Well, as you sit here and look at the diagram and you see the bullet close to the spinal column and close to her, obviously through her lungs, what is it that you do to help stabilize her with a bullet that's remaining in her body?
So what happened to her is that you can see the bullet track, and what happens is it goes through the chest wall into her lung, basically what we call pulmonary contusion or a large bruise and a laceration. And then what happens is that air from the lung and the chest wall fills up between the lung and the chest and actually compresses the lung. Blood also gets into that area, and that makes it dangerous because she won't be able to breathe. If it pushes on the heart, her heart will stop. And so what she needed was a chest tube that goes between the chest wall and the lung to pull that blood out, to pull that air out.
All right, so let's talk about the air and the blood. How does that form after a bullet hole goes through the lung? Is that just your body bleeding?
It's your body bleeding, and then think about when you take a breath, the air that's supposed to stay in the lung, and you back exhale it, the air that you breathe in is going to go between, now that she has a hole in her lung, between the chest and the lung itself.
And so what is the danger of, why doesn't the air and the blood just drain out?
Well, it's trapped in the chest.
And what is it that you do for purposes of putting a tube in for purposes of relieving that problem?
So you actually make an you want the procedure?
Yeah, what do you do?
Yeah,
and then explain to the jury what you are doing.
So basically in the emergency room, you have to make a incision kind of right below her nipple line, because that's where the injury is, that's where the space will be. And you insert a plastic tube, which is called a chest tube, and hook it up to suction, and that will pull the blood and the air out and allow the lung to re-expand.
Do you do that and leave it in, or do you take it out? Tell me what happens after you put in the tube.
So we leave it in because we need to, you know, verify that the lung, the blood has been drained, and we need to verify what we call the lung re-expanding or coming up. So.
All right, I'm going to talk to you about the white box under the yellow box. I'm not about to say those words out loud. Tell us what we're talking about, what was wrong with her, as you point to the left lung.
So the left lung, the words in the left lung basically mean that the top part, there's two lobes of your left lung. The top part had an injury through, because of the bullet, called a laceration. The contusion part is the damage that the bullet, you know, makes as it goes through, like a big, basically contusion means bruise, which is she's got a large bruise around that laceration. And then atelectasis is basically a term for her lung to collapse.
And did her lung collapse?
Yes.
And when it collapses, how does it come back to normal?
It has to be intervened on with this tube. Yes.
And that will then bring it back up to a normal breathing for as long as you have that tube there?
Yes.
Now let me take you to the upper right-hand corner, and I believe that this is an x-ray taking on the day of the shooting, and you will see the yellow arrows and white dots in her left lung. Could you tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury what those signify? This is an actual x-ray, correct?
That's correct.
Tell us what we're looking at here on Abigail Zwerner on the January 6th. What are those?
So the arrow toward the middle of the screen is the bullet fragment. Yes.
All right.
And then the two arrows on the left. Excuse me. I'm saying left because that's the left.
Am I circling the right one?
That's correct. Okay. That's her left side because the X-ray, you're looking straight at it. So the arrows on her left side, you show more fragments. You show air in her inner tissues there, and also the arrow on the bottom shows the rib fracture.
All right. So what are we looking at when you say air? What do we see that we would know as laymen that that's air? I know you would know what it is, but what are we looking at? Purposes of showing that there's air there.
If you were looking at her.
What is it there that tells you that there's air in her lung? Just the cloudiness?
Yeah, so the cloudiness, and then if you actually look at the bottom part of the lung, you can see how that lung side of the lung is a lot, down further. It's a lot, I call larger or longer than the one on the right side.
Gotcha.
That means that air has gotten into the chest wall.
And gotten trapped.
Yes.
Now, let's go to the centered bullet fragment here. This is the same fragment that we saw earlier that is next to the spinal cord.
Yes.
How close is that bullet fragment to the heart of Abigail Zwerner at the time that she is in the Riverside?
Oh, a few centimeters.
Yeah. And could you, with your hand, show the ladies and gentlemen of the jury what a few centimeters?
Something like that, yeah.
And why is it that you can't go in and remove that bullet fragment?
Because anytime you would try to get to that area, there'd be too much things that you could damage and make it worse.
And when there is a bullet fragment 2 centimeters away from the aorta, what's the danger if that bullet fragment moves?
It could be into anything. It'd be the aorta could bleed.
If a bullet fragment gets into the aorta?
Yeah, it's significant life-threatening bleeding.
Would you consider Abigail Zwerner's injuries at that time when you were treating her at Riverside Hospital to be critical?
Yes.
And are all of the things that you treated her for as a result of this bullet injury on January 6th causally related to because of the bullet?
Yes.
Now let me talk about what you did after you helped her lung get back to breathing, did an assessment. What kind of doctors did you recommend to be brought in? I'm not going through in detail with you because we have orthopedic surgeons tomorrow with regard to her hand.
Right.
But obviously she had a bullet injury to her hand. What did you do? You're not an orthopedic surgeon. Did you bring in a team to do that?
Yes.
Do you remember who it is that came in?
Dr. Anderson.
Right. And what is the difference between what Dr. Anderson does as an orthopedic surgeon for the hand injuries versus what you do in the critical care? Is it just focused on the hand?
Yes.
Did you know whether or not he had brought in an extra doctor to assist him with the injuries to the hand?
Not at the time, but it did later.
Did later. Mm-hmm. Now, with regard to the bullet fragment near the aorta, was a doctor brought in to assist with that as well?
Not at the time, no.
It was another doctor brought in besides the orthopedic team, but a different team. Dr. Munn?
Yes, he's one of my partners.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what was the difference between Dr. Munn doing and what you were doing after you did the initial assessment? What did Dr. Munn's role, what was his role? Continuing the surgical care treatment?
Yes, that's correct.
So both of you treated her, Abigail, for as long as she was in the Riverside Hospital?
Yes.
Any idea as we sit here how long she was in Riverside?
Honestly, I can't remember, about a week.
I'll let her talk about it.
Yeah.
I take it that she was not healed when she left, but that's all you could do for purposes of keeping her in the hospital. She was going to continue on with treatment elsewhere.
Yes.
And you let other doctors take over the care after she left Riverside in your care and Dr. Munn's care.
Yes.
1 second, John. But I said that. Doctor, of all of the opinions you've given here today to a reasonable degree of medical probability, all of the things that have happened to her and what you've talked about, your reasonable medical probability, all your opinions you've given?
Yes.
Thought I asked that, but maybe I didn't. I think those are all the questions I have, Doctor.
Thank you, Mr. Bright. And cross-examination?
No questions for the doctor.
No questions. Is he excused?
Yes.
All right.
No other
subpoena. And no other subpoena, correct?
Correct.
All right, your time with us is over.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. All right. next witness?
It will be Julie Zorner.
Raise your right hand for us, please.
Raise your right hand.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks.
Do you swear that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, and will prove nothing but the truth after that?
All right, thank you. Come up, sit here, please.
Around here, just watch your step.
Good afternoon, Julie. Can you state your name, please, for the jury, and then spell it for the court reporter, please?
Sure. Julie Zwerner, J-U-L-I-E-Z-W-E-R-N-E-R.
And can you tell the jury what your relationship to Abby is?
Yeah, Abby is my middle child.
And tell the jury a little bit about your family. How many children do you have?
Okay. Have three children. Daniel is the oldest. 16 months after he was born, I had twin girls, Abby and her sister, Hannah.
Okay. And tell the jury, too, a little bit about yourself. You were a teacher for some time, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Spent 23 years in the classroom.
And what are you doing right now, currently, for your employment?
I'm back in a school as the registrar in an elementary school. So left the classroom, but still am in an elementary school doing what I think I'm good at, record keeping and crunching numbers.
And can you tell the jury a little bit about your daughter, her career path, why she became a teacher?
Yeah, well, ever since kindergarten, I was in Abby and Hannah's school. They were in the same grade, of course, being twins. So when they were in elementary school, I was a part of their school. Through their graduation of high school. So I taught elementary, then I moved to high school, and I'd always been a teacher in her school. I do think that Abby kind of grew to love the profession. She decided to go to college to be a teacher and earned her master's degree from James Madison. She did a five-year program to be a teacher. Part of that decision-making process, she did some shadowing at West Point Elementary, where she spent some time in classrooms and kind of decided, yeah, this is what I want to do. I think I'd be good at this. Also at James Madison, she worked part-time in a preschool and kind of learned that she did love the little ones.
And I'm going to share with the jury right now, read a picture that you can tell us about from her graduation when you see it. We'll share with the jury.
Oh, you want me to talk about that?
Yes.
Yeah, that was her graduation at James Madison.
And can you publish it to the jury, please? Thank you.
Hold on. Any objection?
No, Your Honor.
All right. What number are we giving this?
And this will be plaintiff's 90A. It's first. 90A.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
So without objection, published.
Thank you.
Okay. I mean, I see the big smile. Just so proud and happy to have accomplished what she accomplished, looking right at the camera.
And that was the day of her graduation?
Mm-hmm. Yep, the ceremony at James Madison for her school.
And so on that day, did she know she wanted to be a teacher and that was her plan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She was already well on the path. She just had student teaching left, like that final year student teaching.
And where did she do her student teaching at?
She did the first part up in Harrisonburg. I believe it was a third grade classroom, and then she was able to do the second half in Williamsburg. We lived in West Point at the time, so that was great because she lived at home for that last semester. And that was kind of fun because, you know, we were both teaching, both working on our lesson plans at night and getting our materials prepared and that sort of thing. That was fun.
And can you tell the jury a little about your daughter's interests and her personality before January 6, 2023?
Mm-hmm. Personality-wise, Abby is kind and gentle, very compassionate, the kind of person that people are very comfortable talking to. She makes friends easily. When she makes a friend, it's a deep friendship. She loves music. She loves nature. She learned to love hiking from her dad. They spent lots of time, all the kids did, with John hiking in the mountains. Funny. Abby's quiet, but just will, out of the blue, say something so dry and funny, catches you off guard. Yeah, and silly.
And I know this is a tough subject, but your husband has passed, her father, correct?
Yeah, it's been 5 years.
5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And tell the jury a little bit about, her twin sister was a teacher, correct?
Yeah, Hannah taught for about 2.5 years, up until the time when this incident happened. Hannah did not go back to the classroom after that. But Hannah didn't train or study to be a teacher. She had an English degree, English and musical theater, and she kind of fell into a job because a high school needed an English teacher. So she taught provisionally with a provisional license, which she was, you know, you have 3 years to do that. So she did that. I would not say it was her passion. I definitely feel like Abby, it became her passion. Like, she knew that going into college that that's what she wanted to do. Hannah sort of fell into it.
And how do you know that was
the relevance of her sister's
and we'll move on, Your Honor, from her sister's education.
All right, I will allow what has been testified to, but ask you to move on.
And you stated it was Abby's passion. Why do you feel that that was Abby's passion, that distinguishment? Why do you feel that that's her passion over her sister?
Just the excitement, the joy, the dedication that she showed toward this, you know, from student teaching on, the Saturdays she would go to yard sales looking for things to put in her classroom, the time that she would spend on her own time after hours creating materials, organizing things. She would light up when she kind of discovered some tricks to teaching reading to young kids, or the science lessons. She was always so excited to share things that, you know, trees or birds or the solar system, stars, things like that. That's passion, when you get excited about it. She was excited to be in the classroom and teach those kids.
And Julie, now I want to talk about January 6, 2023. Okay. Can you tell the jury where you were at the time that you got a phone call about your daughter?
I was at work. It was the middle of the day, mid-afternoon after lunch. And my phone rang, and I typically don't answer my phone when I'm at work. And I didn't recognize the name or the number, so I ignored it. The phone rang again, and I thought, well, something's going on. Let me answer and, you know, see who it is. And the name was Brianna Newton. And I knew who that was, but not in the moment. It didn't occur to me. I mean, it was so out of context.
And real quick, who was that, since you said you...
Abby's building principal.
Okay.
I'd never met her, but I knew the name, you know, after the fact. But when the phone was ringing, I was at work, I didn't know. I picked it up on the second ring, the second time she called, and she said, Abby's been shot. Just like that, Abby's been shot. And she must have said she's at Riverside. And that was the extent of the conversation. Hung up, literally, like, grabbed my jacket, lunchbox, bag, went to the next room and told my coworkers, Abby's been shot. And I ran out the door. I ran across the parking lot, got in my car. I was working in Williamsburg. Before I hit the first stoplight, I had called a friend from church. Abby's been shot. Please let our prayer group know, our Bible study group. called my sister Karen, same thing, drove to Williamsburg. I don't really remember the trip, but I know I was, you know, driving way faster than I should have to get to the hospital. By the time I was getting close to the hospital, I remember I was hyperventilating and saying, I can't do this again. I can't do this again. I remember that thought.
I just object to, we're not here on Ms. Warner's damages. We're here to talk about the daughters.
All right. Move it along.
With all due respect, Your Honor.
All I knew is that she had been shot. I didn't know anything else. I didn't know she was alive or not.
And so once you get to the hospital, who greets you at the hospital?
Well, nobody greeted me at the hospital. It was locked down. I didn't know that happened. So I got to the doors and I couldn't get in. And I could see police officers in the emergency room and I didn't know what was going on. Again, I didn't, all I knew, Abby'd been shot. That's
so you didn't know by who or
no,
when or
no,
where?
No, I knew nothing. It was about 5 minutes, I'm guessing, when a deputy or a police officer came and let me in. And they didn't tell me anything. They just led me through the emergency room, down some long halls. And I realized we were headed to the sanctuary in the hospital.
So you ended up being brought to Abby in a room eventually, correct?
Eventually, yes. It was hours later.
Okay.
That
so at that initial time, you didn't know her condition. You weren't sure what was going to happen at that moment.
No. Eventually, I was told she was in surgery, so I knew she was still living. But right, I didn't really know much at that point.
So describe for the jury, when you saw your daughter, what was her appearance like? What was her demeanor like?
She was in pain, you know, all bandaged up, all tubes and machines hooked up to her. Her arm was all wrapped up and, she saw me come through the room and she just said, "Mommy."
And you had shared, she normally doesn't call you Mommy.
Oh, no.
What does she normally call you?
I mean, just Mom.
Yeah.
But I hadn't been Mommy in years.
And when you saw her, was she able to communicate with you?
No, she was pretty out of it. I think she was in a lot of pain and just, you know, her eyes wide, like she was in shock and kind of didn't know what was going on.
And how many days was she in the hospital initially?
Maybe four. I don't remember. I don't remember how many days she was there.
And tell the jury, when she was released, did she go home with you?
She did. She came to live with me. So that I could take care of her. Yeah.
And what was Abby's condition when she was released to you?
When she came to my place, she had a cast, like a, you know, elbow all the way down.
And can we publish?
Big and bulky.
I'm going to put all the other. Okay. Thank you. And, Your Honor, there is another photo that we'll be submitting as Plaintiff's 90B that I'd like to publish to the jury now.
Yeah, that's it.
Any objection?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Admitted and published.
So you were describing a cast. Do you see the photo in front of you?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Is that Abby on the day she was released from the hospital?
Yeah, because she's got her bag in her lap. We're wheeling her out, it looks like.
It looks like she has a smile on under her mask.
Yeah.
So the cast, the size of that cast, why is it that large? Do you know?
It was all the wrapping.
Okay, and was it swollen?
So yeah, it was very, very swollen, and all the wrapping. You can even see her fingers are swollen right there. Yeah, and this doesn't show the chest injury. She, you know, has a bullet hole in her chest, and the bullet's still in there. So you can't see that in that photo, but those were also part of her injuries.
And when you brought her to her house, what did the care of Abby look like? What did you have to do to help care for her at that time?
Anything that would require two hands. So She needed help dressing. She wore that t-shirt home, but we had to order like hospital gowns that would button, could get them around the cast. We kind of got into a routine, what you did first. We had to figure that out, you know, which arm goes first and so forth and so on. She needed wound care on her chest because that was a raw wound, so we had to take care of that. She couldn't bathe. She couldn't wash her hair. She couldn't wash her hands clearly. She couldn't eat something like a sandwich that would take two hands. She was unable to open her medicine bottle. She couldn't, you know, physically, these are things, any limitation she couldn't do with her two hands. So I was dressing her, I was cleaning her, putting the toothpaste on her toothbrush, taking the cap off her deodorant, helping her step into her underwear, helping her step into her sweatpants, putting the hospital gown on, all of that kind of stuff she needed help doing.
So she wasn't even able to use the restroom alone at this time?
No, no.
And she wasn't able to shower for at least a month after, correct?
Yeah, it was a good month before she showered, yeah.
And even then, you would have to help her mm-hmm. with all of that?
Correct.
And she wasn't able to drive during this time at all?
No, she wasn't driving.
And did she have medical appointments that she would have to go to?
She did. She had a lot of appointments. I took 2 weeks off work, and then her sister Hannah took time off after that to help get Abby to and from all the appointments and could, you know, still take care of her.
And tell the jury, are there still medical appointments that she's dealing with to this day?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Abby is driving now. But she's still not done with surgery. She had her most recent surgery, I think it was number 6, was in April. She recently had a follow-up for that, and we're still just kind of waiting. She has a plate in her hand still, and it's not healing the way they want. That April surgery was actually a bone graft. They took bone out of her right hip and put it in her hand, and that's what they're watching for. That's what they're waiting on. She has another appointment in December, so it's just kind of like this waiting game. So between now and December, she's just continuing to wear the brace as much as possible and go to the doctor in December, and at that point they'll decide if they're ready to remove the plate. If not, we're waiting more. Once all that's done, we still have more OT appointments ahead of her. So it's just kind of this never ending.
And just for the jury, OT, occupational therapy.
Occupational therapy, right, where she'll learn how to use the fine motor skills that she's lost with her left hand.
And describe your daughter's personality since January 6th of 2023.
Now, she's afraid a lot. Certain things scare her. Crowds, going to certain places, she won't go to. Things I've never had to think about have been an issue for Abby. For example, we've had a couple of family, like baby shower kinds of things with balloons. And the first time one of those balloons popped, you know, it was traumatizing for Abby. It was like being right back there. Nobody in the family ever thought twice about not having balloons there. You know, we don't think that way. We've never had to. But that's what Abby's world is now. Those things that you don't expect to trigger can trigger. Something else that happened fairly recently, we were going to go see a movie, and we even had the tickets. And the morning of the day we were going to go see the movie, Abby literally could not leave her house. She said, "I can't go. I don't want to go. There's a scene in that movie. I can't go.
Do you mind me asking what movie it was?
It was the film version of Hamilton. And I know there are a couple of dueling scenes in there. And I don't know if that's what she was referring to. That's what I think, probably. But things I never would have thought about before. I'm learning to like consider what her world is like, you know, just being afraid of things or things happening without warning that kind of bring her right back. She really has trouble staying in touch with people. People reach out to her via text or leave a voice message, and you know, she hears it, she reads it, she just cannot find the energy to reply or to commit or to, you know, call back or whatever it is. So that's been hard. I feel like she kind of is in a shell. She doesn't really have a purpose right now, where her job was the thing that centered her and fulfilled her and her way to make the world a better place. Abby's living from appointment to appointment, not really knowing what's next.
And how was she immediately after the hospital when she was staying with you for those first couple months with getting out of bed or trying to do things?
Abby, from that day, she has done everything the doctors have asked her to do, and she has really tried to get better. I mean, I applaud her, the way that she has just put one foot behind the other and just done what she needed to do to get better, to heal. She goes to therapy a couple times a week. Two different therapists with different specialties. She's trying to get better. She's doing everything that she should be doing. But I see she's overwhelmed by it. I would say she's depressed.
Objection, Your Honor.
Okay. And
yeah, argument you want to make on that?
I'll ask her to, if Your Honor would allow, to describe the emotion, but you're not a doctor, so please
right.
be mindful not to.
I'm not,
you know,
diagnosing.
We'll have someone
her.
Else correct. But right. does she seem sad or happy?
So that's sustained.
Yes.
And
okay.
striking the word depression. Okay.
Thank you,
Thank
okay.
you very much.
All
right. You may proceed now.
So try to describe mm-hmm. her emotion.
Well, I can describe what I see. She has trouble getting out of bed sometimes. She has trouble setting goals, making decisions. She does not find joy in things she used to find joy in. She sleeps a lot. So those are things that I see.
And at this time, do you know what Abby's plans are moving forward with a career?
No, because how... She can't make plans. She doesn't know what her future is going to look like. Assuming the hand gets as good as it's going to get and she finishes OT and all that, she's you know, in a lot of pain. It's painful.
And talking about that, she's mm-hmm. had... How's her right hand, the one that was not shot? With the
right, and her right
Your Honor,
hand.
I'm just objecting. We're getting into medical testimony from a layperson. These are things that Ms. Warner herself can describe. I've allowed this to go on for a fair amount of time, but I'm going to have to object.
You have a response?
And Your Honor, I'm certainly not asking her to get into any medical conditions, but to describe, she's very familiar with her daughter. She's the one who's supporting her daughter and seeing the struggles and having to, you know, open containers and do certain things for her daughter. She certainly understands what her daughter's capabilities are. So I'm more asking for the capabilities that her daughter, that she can observe her daughter doing.
All right, I'm going to overrule it, and you're permitted to certainly testify to your observations of things.
Okay. All right. What Abby has told me is that her right hand, even though it's her dominant hand, because she's having to compensate and use her right hand more, that is often sore now as well. Okay. You were asking about future plans. None that we've discussed. She has shared that she doesn't want to go back into the classroom, which I think it saddens me, but I totally understand. I think Abby was becoming a really good teacher. And so that does sadden me. But I don't know what her limitations are going to be and what kind of work she'll be allowed to do would be able to handle.
And is there anything else that you want to share with the jury about your daughter since the shooting?
I would share that Abby has never complained. Not once have I heard her complain about what's happened and what she's been going through. She's more worried about others. In fact, today she wanted to be here when I'm up here to support me, and that's who Abby is. Yeah.
Thank you. You'll answer any of the judges' questions or opposing counsel.
Sure.
Cross-examination.
Just a few questions, Ms. Warner. Are you aware that your daughter's been to cosmetology school since the shooting?
Yes.
Okay, so there's some positive sides here. That was something she had been considering before this event, correct?
No, she always liked doing hair, but cosmetology was not something that she'd considered as a career, no.
To your knowledge?
To my knowledge, okay. Correct.
But she did complete a 1 year of cosmetology,
right.
School, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And she's become licensed as a cosmetologist.
Right. That's right.
And she's also made a lot of media appearances. As you talked about being out in the public, she's also made a lot of media.
I think she did two. One was in my home, and I think the other was at Diane's office.
Because you've been on the Today Show.
Right. They came to my home. It wasn't like out in the public.
Because it's putting yourself out in the public. Agree?
Sure.
And there's been a tremendous amount of community support for your daughter, correct?
I would say so, yes.
No further questions.
All right. Any follow-up?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Is she excused?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And is she going to be recalled at any point?
Not from us, Your Honor. And speaking for Ms. Warner for a moment, I think she'd like to be in the courtroom, so unless there's intention from defense counsel to call her later in their case, we'd ask permission to release her and allow her to sit in the courtroom and observe the trial.
That was my next question. Any objection to releasing her at this time?
No objection, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. You are now relieved of your subpoena as a witness. You may now stay in the courtroom if you so desire. Okay. All right. What do we have next?
I may be the bearer of good news or bad news, depending on how Your Honor takes it. For the jury. We're ahead of schedule, so that was the last witness that we have for today.
Okay.
I think there are some matters that we can probably address with the court, but we have no other witnesses to call this afternoon.
I think it's probably a good stopping point then anyways, and pretty close in lawyer time. So, all right, so you would ask that I excuse the jury for the night, same admonition, and then we'll start at 9 tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, folks. You are going to hear this every night. I am required by law to read it to you, so I'm going to read it to you, and you know what I'm going to say. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we will recess now for our evening break. I ask that you be back in the jury room at 9 a.m. tomorrow. During the break recess in the course of this trial, you are not to begin the discussion of any of the aspects of this case. Upon your return, you are requested to go immediately to the courtroom and not loiter in any hall. You are not to engage in any conversation with any of the parties, the witnesses, the attorneys, or any of the spectators. You are not to go to the scene of this case or undertake any independent investigation. No one should approach you and discuss this matter, and you should not remain within hearing distance of anyone discussing any aspect of this case. That includes the television, the internet, a blog, or anything else that we've talked about already. Of course, that includes viewing newspapers or television or even listening to the radio. You must also leave your notepads and any notes you have taken with my sheriff. He's going to collect them. They'll be in his safekeeping. No one's going to look at them. No one's going to touch them. No one's going to read them. If you are approached by anyone concerning your jury service during the course of this trial, please make sure that I am aware and my sheriff is aware of that fact. We will take care of it from there. Once again, please be back in the jury room at 9 a.m. And please tell anyone who asks you, please tell me what you're doing. You are in a trial. I have ordered you not to discuss it. That is all. Thank you very much, folks.
Please rise for the jury.
You may be seated. All right, were there other matters you wanted to take up outside the presence?
We discussed, Your Honors, in the pretrial we had talked about experts.
Mm-hmm.
And we intend, likely our next witness, the first witness in the morning, will be Dr. Shufflebarger. And so, and that's the administration expert, Your Honor, that was subject to a couple motions. She's not here, unfortunately. I wish we could have done that now, and in hindsight, I wish we had that. But we had talked about it, and our hope is to sort of streamline and share what the conclusions are that we intend to have her offer, and then maybe in the morning we can take that up with the court and then determine if it's necessary to do the preview, as Your Honor discussed in the pretrial. That, I just wanted to alert the court of that, and unless they have any other ideas, that's what I think we're done with today.
All right.
Agreed, Your Honor. I think we might be able to work out the issues on at least the administration experts. I'm not sure about some of the others. I'll have to talk to Mr. Vinayazan about it, but we were just trying to think of creative ways to have a goose gander agreement on the expert parameters that could alleviate some of the issues raised in the motions in limine.
Okay, well, I appreciate you two talking about it. Of course, I'll be here to make the decision if need be. But yeah, I would appreciate any work you can do together, streamline what you can agree to and what you can't, and then we can obviously attack the things that you don't agree on, and I can make rulings on that so we can get started as soon as possible.
Yes, sir.
All right.
I had one more logistical matter, if it's okay, given the court's time and the jury's time. We've always been told pretty much that they would finish on Friday midday, and Mr. Vinayazan made the comment they're a little bit ahead of schedule. I think, Your Honor, when Your Honor said you'd pick a jury in a day, I don't know that I would have believed that, but you were right. I will always remember
I've been
that.
Right about one thing.
You
right?
have been right, Your Honor, and that jury questionnaire, I think, went a long way to accomplishing that, and I thank you for that, Your Honor. But in any event, I felt duty-bound to raise that today because it's Tuesday out of respect for the court's time. We have our experts coming in on Monday is the plan, and I wanted to alert the court that because I didn't want to get into a situation. I've been in Richmond Circuit Court before. I don't know, you're probably too young for Judge Johnson, but if you didn't have a witness in the box, you might have problems, and I did not want to run afoul of any issues with the court on that. So I wanted to bring it up. To see how the court felt about that.
Okay.
And Ms. Douglas is right. We're running ahead of schedule, so I think at this point we may be even done Thursday early afternoon.
Right.
We do have an expert that's coming Thursday morning and traveling in, so we know for certain that we'll be putting on an expert Thursday morning and then likely a couple more witnesses that day. And so we'll have witnesses Thursday, but the way that we're going, I think we'll be done certainly by the end of Thursday, if not early afternoon.
All right. And you are basically telling me you cannot get your witnesses or put on any evidence on Friday?
We might have some witnesses on Friday. We need to see where we are, given sort of the moving target of the parameters.
Sure.
Or how far we were going to go. We need to sort of powwow about that and make a determination. However, my experts are aligned to come up next week.
For Monday.
Week.
And,
yes,
and I will respect that, having done that kind of work as well. So what I would ask then is maybe you could put together a list of some witnesses we could do Friday, anything we could get done on Friday.
That's my thought, Your
okay.
Honors. And given that it's Halloween,
correct.
I think if we finished early that day, that will go a long way with appreciation by the jury if
yeah,
the court
certainly.
Is willing to accommodate.
Yeah,
that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am on the same page with both of you on that.
Well,
I appreciate that. All right, and Mr. Bright needs to say something.
Not fair.
Because there have been so many witnesses that were double subpoenaed and so many of them coming back, maybe we don't know. I know that they have to schedule them if they're coming, but I want to make sure since there's other outside counsel representing some of those witnesses that only the scheduling be discussed since they've already been on the stand. And I know that goes without saying with counsel, but I just want to make sure that anyone who may have witnesses who may be brought back as a second side of this case, that only the scheduling is supposed to be talked about.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And obviously those witnesses have also been admonished not to talk about this case in any way with anyone. Okay. All right, well, thank you very much. I appreciate the civility everyone has shown and the professionalism that everyone has shown. I think it's been a very good example of how a trial should run. Thank you very much. We'll be in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise.
Of course, now recess.
More continuing coverage of the Abby Zwirner civil trial is coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.